Hi, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to a new episode of the Phoenix MMA podcast. I hope everybody's having a great Sunday, holiday weekend. We got Memorial Day tomorrow, and we had a tournament yesterday. So we'll have the AGF Jiu-Jitsu tournament. We'll have a breakdown on that. And then a couple other things. Had a couple podcast ideas that were backlogged, but they're just kind of short. So I'll kind of have a combination of a couple. There's some I could go long-winded, but just can knock them out short and sweet, and I'll put them in with this, with the AGF breakdown as well, and just be a good one. So some good tips on this one. First thing for the gym, Phoenix MMA, we don't have classes are canceled for Memorial Day. We're going to have an open mat from 12 to 2 p.m. So if you want to come train, we will be open from only 12 to 2 p.m. on Memorial Day. Need to start off the podcast by saying thank you for Memorial Day, for all the soldiers that have sacrificed, given the ultimate sacrifice, given their lives. We're extremely lucky to just have the opportunity to live in the United States and live in the country that we live in. And it's because people are willing to fight and protect us and willing to give their lives. So, you can't say thank you enough. There's really nothing that we can do that will repay that debt, other than just all you can do is just try to be a person that's worth dying for, like a citizen, American, and just be the best person you can, and do your best to make the country and the world as good a place as it can be, from everything, just how you treat people and how you treat your community where you live, and just try to make it as good as possible. That's all we can do, because things are always falling apart. It's just natural. It's just part of nature. Things fall apart, and always have to work to control chaos, or just, things degrade over time. It's just how it happens, and we got to maintain it. We got a really cool setup. We have a really good situation where we live, community, culture, country. We got a really good thing. So we need to work to keep it going good, and maintain it and take care of it, and also be humble and not be arrogant, and realize that the reason why we are where we are is because a lot of people have done a lot of hard work, struggle a whole lot, and paid the ultimate price, sacrifice for us. So just start the podcast off, and I know that as a country, one nice thing when looking at politics is just rewinding the clock. I like to read books that are, it might be from some 500 years ago or 1,000 years ago. Politics are always like ravenous and crazy, and it always seems like the world's going to end. And some cultures and societies and countries do. That is a cycle where they collapse. But one thing is that it's always going this way. It's real. I don't think there's ever just this Goldilocks sweet time where everybody's getting along. But we do have a lot to, there's plenty of things that we need to work on. There's plenty of things that we can complain about. But there's way more things that we need to be, that we can be thankful for. And I think that's an important thing to do. We're all thankful that when we go to sleep every night, we don't have a high probability of, the house or the building we're in being bombed. That's something that you don't realize that you're appreciative of until it's taken away. And every single night you go to sleep, you think that you might not wake up. It's really hard to do anything, to have a good life, to learn, to work, to build a career, to do anything if every single night you're worried when you go to sleep. So we are lucky we're not in that situation. So thank you to the armed forces, military, soldiers for everything, all that you do and all that you have done. And happy Memorial Day if I don't see you tomorrow. To everybody, hope you have a good weekend and a good Sunday, good Monday. Quick little house cleaning for the gym. I was going to do this as a podcast, but we can knock it out short and sweet. Over the last 3 months, we've had a couple pops up of ringworm. Not like a lot of staff, but more ringworm. So just tips, ringworm. Ringworm, I have not experienced a real dangerous case of ringworm, like health-wise, in my experience. But they are nasty, and they can spread real easy. Staph infections, much more serious, so you got to take staph much more serious. When it comes to getting seen to it by a doctor, much more quickly with staph. But both ringworm and staph, the solution is really simple. Wear clean gear to every practice, so make sure you're wearing clean clothes to every practice. Clean clothes. It's summertime too, so please wear deodorant and make sure that you've bathed that day, you know. You know, that's why we have hand sanitizer on the side of the mat. We actually have it for people's feet. So if you've had socks on all day, boom, you can just hit the hand sanitizer, kill the funk off your feet. But make sure you're wearing clean clothes. Don't wear dirty clothes to any training sessions. So if you're practicing them, they need to be washed. You know, you also need to shower after every training session. You know, minimum one shower a day. But, you know, if you're doing two or three sessions a day, you might have to take two or three showers a day. So you don't get, because if you get staph infection, it's not going to be fun. And it's also contagious. So this is just a cleanliness thing. This is real basic, you know, like brushing your teeth, bathe every day, wear clean training gear to practice every day. That will keep the majority of staph and ringworm away. As a gym, we disinfect the mats three or four times a day. And we try to keep everybody from being barefoot in the bathroom. And we also have the hand sanitizer on the side of the mat to help as well. But staph infection lives on everybody's skin. It's on your skin at all times, hair follicles. It's in your nostrils. It's really when it gets inside an open wound. It's also the reason why we have the hand sanitizer. So it's just alcohol and gelatin, so you can put it on it if so you get scratched or something like that. But the biggest thing is just as soon as you can, whenever you get home, just shower after you train. Because, you know, you got anywhere from 10 to 20 people sweat all over your body. So it's good for you to experience pathogens and germs like that. It builds up your immune system. But at the same time, you got to clean yourself. Don't sleep with it on. You want to experience it, but don't marinate in it. Don't sleep overnight and don't let it just don't put a bandage over it where it's like a petri dish of being dark, moist and germs and an open wound. Also, this one's wear MMA gear or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu gear or Muay Thai gear. So don't wear shorts with pockets in it. That's going to cut down on the injuries. I've done this in podcasts before, but we actually had this at the tournament yesterday. If you have pockets, the reason why you can't wear pockets for competition, and it's because, like, say if you throw a kick and somebody's foot gets stuck in your pocket, or when you're grappling, a finger or a hand gets stuck in your pocket. That's one they're not going to let you do it in competition. Don't wear shorts or things with zippers on them. And the reason why is it'll tear up the mat. So as you're moving around, the friction of your weight combined with somebody else's weight presses into the mat. When you move, your zipper rips the mats. The AGF over the weekend had those rules where it's like you had to wear a shirt with sleeves on it, no sleeveless shirts. You had to wear shorts and no pockets and no zippers and things. So the sleeveless shirt, I don't like to wear sleeveless shirts just because if I'm doing no-gi, I don't want to put my armpit hair in somebody's face if I'm trying to choke them. It's like a courtesy thing. But I think they might have been doing it just because they're following the IBJJF, the World Championship standards of a rash guard with sleeves on it. So that might be the thing. Let's see. The other thing too, if you're still what I do, I'm not a doctor, I'm not recommending this. And if you do it, or what I'm not recommending is just go ahead and do this. It says it on the label as well. But tea tree oil, it says that what you want to do is you want to dilute it and you test it on a small, like, little patch test on your skin to make sure you don't have an allergic reaction. But so don't just follow what I do, because I don't have an allergic reaction to tea tree oil. But what I do is Stephanie actually gets me tea tree soap, like bars of soap. I use that a lot of times. But if I don't have it, I just get tea tree oil at like Walgreens, the concentrated little form. And I open up my body wash and I pour it in my body wash and then I shake it and mix it up. Tea tree oil is really good at killing staph and ringworm. I read a study years ago that tea tree oil was as effective, shown to be as effective as antibiotics. I can't quote that study, can't remember, but as effective as at treating MRSA, medically resistance, anyway, I don't want to mess it up if I don't have it written down in front of me, but MRSA, and I don't have that study that I can just pull off the top of my head, but if you want to search for it, but tea tree oil, just make sure you don't have an allergic reaction, but really easy. It's like $10 at Walgreens, and it'll last you months, or you can, if you want to just buy a brand and not do that, there's a brand soap called Defense Soap, and it's just tea tree oil. It's just soap with tea tree oil in it. And I think it has eucalyptus too. And then I just get, I think it's a green little bar of soap, but it's a tea tree soap. I like the smell of tea tree oil, and it helps with, I never get ringworm in every staff. I teach at least 2 classes a day, and I'm practicing with classes and private lessons, 2 or 3 practices a day, and I very rarely get staph infection or ringworm. I haven't got staph in years. I haven't got ringworm in a good bit, too. Probably wrestling around with anywhere from 20 to 50 sweaty people every single day, 2-3 times a day, 5 days a week, and then 6 days, 6 days a week, and I very rarely get it, but that's my what I do, and it's not expensive. Again, tea tree oil, like $10, or that tea tree soap is still not crazy expensive, but the tea tree oil is the cheapest way to do it. Just make sure you're not allergic, and then just clean your stuff. It's just normal, normal good hygiene stuff. Okay, so that one, done with that. The next topic that we're going over before we do the AGF breakdown review is another podcast idea I wanted to go over, and it's the thought that something I've noticed. I thought at first that it was maybe more aggressive people, or just like people that are more naturally aggressive or more assertive, or people that don't know what they're doing, like they don't have an answer to a situation. All those are factors, but I noticed recently with somebody that's very technical, that is a good jiu-jitsu practitioner, so they know the answers to the techniques, and then I finally had the epiphany, and I remembered when I've done this before in tournaments. So I've done this before in tournaments, I've done it before in the gym, and the topic is people with the worst cardio sprint. So it's like people with the worst cardio, I've noticed when they're sparring in the gym, tournaments as well happen, but they sprint. But people with really good cardio don't sprint. So this is really strange. Like, why does that happen? It's like, if you have bad cardio, why would you sprint? You're going to get tired really quick. People with really good cardio, it's like, hey, you can afford to sprint. Why don't you sprint? And I just had to think about it, and then I thought back. I was like, okay, I've had tournaments where I've done this where it's an injury or I couldn't train regularly or whatever, and I was like, okay, it's a 10-minute match, it's a 6-minute match. I don't have good cardio, so I have to beat my opponent in the first 2 minutes. And I was like, aha, that's it. When you don't have confidence in your cardio, you believe that you need to sprint, because if it goes longer than 5 minutes, I'm done. It's over. My only chance to win is if I sprint. So just going to talk about that real quick, like why I think it's a bad training principle. And even if you're not in the best conditioning, I don't think it's going to be conducive for your training, and it's going to be frustrating, because I've been noticing a lot in the gym where their conditioning is not where it needs to be, and they try to sprint, and then their face is blood red and they're like super tired. And like I said, I have fallen into the exact same mental trap before. So like for practice, this is not competition. This might happen in a competition at some point, and you just got to do whatever you got to do. Say if it's a big tournament or there's money on the line, there's a fight, and like say you break your foot 3 weeks out from a fight or a tournament, and you have to do the fight or tournament, you've committed to do it, but your foot is fractured, so you can't run, you can't do enough cardio, you have to just let your foot rest, so your cardio is bad. So then it would be a smart strategy. You know that your cardio is not good. It would be smart to come out in the competition, in the fight of the tournament, and try to win all your matches really quick. That's a smart tactic. It's not, that would be a scenario. It's like, okay, my foot, I've had to let it rest. I know I have to win quickly. But you don't want to do that in the gym. The reason why you don't want to do it in the gym is your skill development is very difficult when you're redlining. If you hear me say redline, I've been saying in the gym a lot. What I mean by it, like redlining your cardio. So when you're going at 100%, learn this in the police academy, the driving course. And it was talking about your awareness cone. So the faster you go, you start, if you just think about a cone, if you're driving like 30 miles an hour and like your perceptive field is really wide, like think, you can perceive everything from all the way to your, as far as you can see from your right side of your perspective, all the way to the left side, but your eyes are gazing forward. But it was a cool lesson that the faster you go, there's this cone that starts narrowing, and it starts getting more and more like a laser. It starts getting smaller and smaller. So the faster your speed goes, the more narrow your perception. And the reason why the more narrow your perception is because you're going at a higher speed. So things are traveling faster. and your stress is also going to go up as well. The same thing happens for practice. So if you're, this could be Muay Thai, Jiu-Jitsu, boxing, whatever it is, and for competition as well. But the exact same thing goes for combat sports. So the faster you go, the more you get in that tunnel vision, the faster you're actually moving, the less amount of time that you have to react to your opponent's attack. So, you know, it's not just like a, you know, it's not just an open road or an open track. If it's an open track and nobody's on there, you can go at 200 miles an hour. The second that there are other cars on the road, now you have to maybe throttle back or slow down. Or what it is you can only go at 200 miles an hour if you are really, really good. Like you're really technical and all the other drivers are really technical. But if you're on a road and the other drivers are not very technical, or you're not, you better not be driving 200 miles an hour. But for like, for combat sports, BJ Penn in his prime, in his book, it's called The Book of Knowledge. It's a really good book. When he was in his prime, he said that a good training intensity is 60-70% for skill development. And BJ was one of the fastest. He was called the prodigy. He was the first American Jiu-Jitsu world champion in 3 years. He was a black belt. It's insane timing. Then after that, he went to the UFC and became UFC champion and went around everywhere, fought at heavyweight. BJ's issues that he had, his main issues with his career were discipline and consistency in his training and his conditioning. But skill, he was insanely skillful. That's why his nickname was the prodigy. So when he said, like I've always memorized that, when he said 60-70% exertion rate when you're sparring, that's so that because you're not for a combat sport, it's not just linear. You have to think on the fly. You have to make adjustments. If you go, say you're going at 90 to 100%, there will be very small pockets where you will go 90 to 100%. If you're going at 90 or 100%, doesn't matter how good a shape you are, you are going to get fatigued. You, by definition, you can't go at 95% for very long. Also, when you are the most vulnerable to be attacked is when you are attacking. This is for all combat sports. It's the reason why counterpunching works. So if you come out with 90% exertion, like boxing, there is a high chance for you to get countered if your opponent is good and athletic. Now, if they're not very good and they don't have a good chin and they're not tough, yeah, you're going to win with that. That's going to be a successful strategy. But if they are good, and the same thing for jiu-jitsu, same thing for wrestling, if you're going 95% and they're at 70% and they're being smart and they just absorb your offense and your attacks, you are going to be tired. And when you're tired, you can't do anything. And then they're still fresh. They're good to go. So that's the conditioning side. Like it's not a smart way to manage your energy, cause you're spending too much energy when you shouldn't be. But in practice is for skill development. So like when you're drilling, you should be trying to get every single rep that you're drilling like as perfect as possible, or you're experimenting with your partner about like, hey, what if right here, what do you think about this angle? That's like skill development while you're drilling. But when you're sparring, skill development is when you're at that 60-70% exertion rate, you have the ability to see what your opponent's counters are. You can feel them. You can see where they are. You can see where the openings are. You can also, because you can cut off their counters. If you do make a mistake, because you're going at that speed, 60-70%, or not necessarily, speed's not the best word, just exertion rate, you can perceive what mistakes you make. Or if your opponent has a really cool counter, you can notice what they did to you. But when you're going 90 to 100%, you can't. You're just like a bull in a china shop, just running around everywhere. Even if you do something and it's successful, you won't be able to recreate it because you were going at such a high exertion rate, you couldn't memorize what you did, okay? So if you go at too high of an exertion rate, you will not be able to actually notice what you're doing. You won't be able to notate it. So when you do something successful, you won't be able to remember it. When you do something, a failure, you won't be able to remember it. You will get tougher and your conditioning will get better, but you won't become more skillful. Okay. Practice is for skill development. Sport practice is for skill development. Conditioning workouts, cardio workouts are for cardio development. We're not trying to build sports skills during cardio. During cardio, we're building cardio, conditioning. During strength training, we're doing strength development. During sport practice, we are doing skill development, okay? So you can actually simplify it, and it's pretty easy. Couple little tips on this. Like, let's see. Oh, okay. So the other reason why you don't want to do this. So one, this skill, you're not going to learn as fast because you can't notate what's going on, what I just said, but also you're going to up the chance of injury significantly for you and your partners, because you, no matter what, you can't control yourself at 98% as well as you can at 70% or 75%. It's just by definition, you don't have as much control of your body. So you're more likely to injure yourself or your training partner. That might be a sprained ankle. It might be a torn ACL. It might be a thumb gouge in the eye. It could be a bunch of things. It could be spiking someone on their head, or, you know, a bunch of stuff. It could be kicking somebody at their kneecap. It could be a low blow. So the injury rate's going to go up. And the key, like why we were so successful over the weekend, is having an organized, synchronized team that can work together over a long period of time. Football teams do the same thing. Football teams, basketball teams, all of these teams that develop really, really good teams, it's because they have good cohesion. They're organized. They're civil with each other. This is even, I've been listening to a Lex Fridman podcast on civilizations, the rise and fall. And one of the most important things is, they said, is development of education. They said the development of education obviously helps with agriculture and helps with technology, but actual education on civil education, so how to be civil with each other. And the reason why being civil with each other on the same, in the same civilization country team, why it's so important, is when you do that and everybody knows how to behave with each other, then you get this group cohesion. And, you know, then you got this person who has a really good left hook. You have this good person who has a really good heel hook. You have this person who has a really good Kimura. And everybody synchronizes and they all start working together, and you help each other out with them because you teach each other's good stuff. But also, just by sparring with each other, you teach each other, and by teaching each other, it hones your skill because they come out with counters to it, but it also hones their defense, so that when you go against another team in a tournament, you're already developed. So like I got really good ankle lock defense because this person has really good ankle lock offense, and I got to develop. But you can't do that without good team organization and without team cohesion and without being civil with each other. Of course, there's comedy and jokes, like that's going to be part of it, but you have to be civil with each other and you have to work together as a team. It's one of the reasons why with the gym, like I might sound like an old grandpa sometimes, but I'm trying to make it so that one, people get as good as possible, as fast as possible. Also so that everybody goes home and they can go to work the next day and we're not injured, but also so that people enjoy the gym. It's a fun thing. It's a fun part of your day. And it's also, it's the way to be the most successful as a team, as a civilization, as a, you know, military unit, as a, whatever you're going to do, you have to actually have order. And there are stupid rules with things. Like some gyms will be like, hey, we don't do no gi at all. Some gyms will say, hey, we don't do any leg locks. There needs to be an actual good explanation. There's a good reason why you shouldn't do full blast head kicks when you're sparring every day. There's a good reason why you shouldn't do full blast heel hooks every day. But you should, like, should you not do leg locks at all? No. Beginners shouldn't be doing live takedowns. But should beginners be drilling takedowns? Yes, that's how they're going to develop the skill to be able to do live takedowns. They have to build to it. Should you never do no-gi? Are you going to ever compete in no-gi? Then, like, you better do no-gi. Should you never do gi? If you're going to compete in gi, you better, okay? If you're going to do MMA, you better focus the majority of your time on no-gi. So there, like, if somebody's saying, hey, there's stupid rules, I understand. There are some rules that are not very smart. But, like, yeah, if you hear, I promise I'm trying to sift through and make the best rules. And the thing is, like, hey, be civil with each other. It's the way that you want to be treated, but it's also the way that it makes the gym and the team grow as fast as possible, and people are going to enjoy it. And and if you enjoy it, you're going to learn faster. You know, with one of the things that recent rules have put in that are more strict on is no jumping submissions. You can drill jumping submissions, but don't do jumping submissions while you're sparring. If you do jumping submissions while you're sparring, if you make one error or your partner makes one error, both of you fold over their knee and you blow out their knee, and they're out for 6 months at least. Okay. Drill them, but don't do them during sparring. Anyway, so that's the, if I sound like old grandpa sometimes, it's, I'm not trying to take the fun out of it. I'm trying to actually make it the best experience for everybody in the gym. And that best experience is going to make it more enjoyable, less injuries, and more skill, okay? You will see stuff on like UFC Fight Pass or something where it's like barbarian training stuff. They don't do that in normal sport practice. They do it for people that don't train and don't understand it, because normal people are going to see drilling a jab, right, a jab rear hook to the body is boring. Normal people are going to see doing a leg lock entry as boring, or normal people are going to see hand fighting as boring. This is not for normal people. This is for people who want to train, people who are in the gym and they want to actually get better. So back on the red lining while you're sparring, higher chance injury, your skill acquisition goes down, you don't develop the necessary skills, and your awareness drastically lowers, and your awareness field. So 60-70% exertion rate is a good sweet spot. Okay. Now I'm not telling you, to not do hard cardio sessions. Okay. Because if you spar all the time, super, super hard, you will get injured. Okay. So what's a good answer? Find some type of low risk cardio. The more simple the cardio, the higher, the more you can redline it, the higher you can go. So like if you find a hill or something that's 20 yards and you do hill sprints, you could do those like a set of 10 where you sprint up and walk down. Don't sprint down the hill. If you're sprinting on a concrete hill and you get lightheaded and you fall, that's how you're going to get injured. Walk down the hill. Sprint up the hill. When you're sprinting up the hill, you're going to be running pretty slow because it's uphill. So that's the point. You're giving yourself a very simple task, your body a very simple task that you can go at a very high exertion rate. So there's a low chance of injury, because when you go at that high exertion rate, your control goes out of the window. This is the thing. People try to do one of the, when they're sparring, they try to go madhouse crazy or whatever. And then, or I would say people go one or the other. They want to be a killer athlete with crazy strength and conditioning, but they're not super technical, or they want to be super technical with no strength and conditioning. Okay. I want you to be both. Okay. And you can be both. You can do both of these. Okay. For sport practice, like an example, say if you could only make it to jiu-jitsu 2 days a week. When you're in jiu-jitsu, focus on it being a skill practice. It's okay, that's it. So focus on a skill practice. Now, when you're sparring, still try hard. You're going to get tired, of course, but make it a skill practice. And if you could make it to jiu-jitsu 2 days a week for class, make those skill practices. Then then take 2 other days to do a conditioning practice, a cardio practice, and that's when you get to redline it. That's when you get to go high intensity. You could do this with a, you know, Aerodyne bike or like an elliptical bike. You could do it on treadmill, perhaps something that is a low chance of injury. I think a hill sprint's probably the easiest thing, because you're going to run up the hill pretty slow. It's very hard. It's going to force you. It's very, very good conditioning. It is going to make you dog tired. But when you're going up the hill, you go really slow and then walk down the hill. Use the walk down the hill as your recovery time. And I actually used to do this in high school. I used to do it where we had a U-shaped driveway that's maybe like 100 yards long. I would jog down the hill and then I would sprint up the hill, and I would jog down the hill and I'd sprint up the hill. And what I would visualize as when I was jogging down the hill, for wrestling, I was hand fighting, I was moving, I was recovering on my feet in a good stance. Then when I'd sprint up the hill, I would visualize that I was attacking. To me, that's the closest thing you can get to combat sports conditioning is hill sprints, where that's what it feels like when you're going for takedowns, you're going for submissions, or you're throwing a long combination, you're going back and forth. Where you're so tired, where you're like delirious and you can hardly move and sweats in your eyes. But you don't want to do that while you're sparring. If you do it while you're sparring, injuries go up, skill development drastically goes down, and you're just going to spin your wheels. And you're going to wonder, you're going to be like, I'm training so hard. Why am I not getting better? I'm training so hard. Why am I not getting better? You're not doing the optimal training. Optimal training is skill time. Focus on developing your skill. Upgrade your brain. Upgrade the skill that you understand. Physical training, upgrade your chassis, upgrade your frame, your body. Make yourself stronger when you're working on strength training. For conditioning, make yourself better conditioning. If you're going to compete, this is something too. So strength training is good, but if you're going to do a tournament, you're going to compete, conditioning training is probably going to be more important than your strength training. And guys love to lift weights because it makes us more muscular and it feels good. It feels great to lift weights. But when it comes to combat sports, conditioning, cardio training is going to be more important than your strength training. As long as you're in the right weight class and you're big enough for your weight class, my recommendation would be, my minimum really recommendation would be 4 days a week you need to redline it. So you need to go to high intensity where you are super, super tired 4 times a week, 4 sessions a week. That could be 2 jiu-jitsu and 2 conditioning, or whatever you're doing. But you need 4 of those if you're going to compete, if you're going to do a tournament. If you're not going to compete, it's not necessary. But if you're going to do a tournament, you need to do that. Because like, say if you do 2 jiu-jitsu practices a week and then 3 strength training a week, you're not going to have enough cardio to compete. You're going to be strong enough. If you're doing really good with your skill might be good. But you're not doing the biggest weak point that you have is your conditioning. You're not doing enough if it's 2 jiu-jitsu and 3 strength training sessions. Your strength is going to be on point. But if you just plot it out in that number, it's 2 skill practices you did, 3 strength training practices you did, and 1 or 0 conditioning. Your jiu-jitsu is like we'll say counted as a half, like a 0.5 or something. If you're just doing the standard class, if you do the competition class, that one counts as a conditioning session. You're definitely going to redline it. But again, you can't do the competition class until your skill is high enough, to be able to handle that class. So just hill sprints is the easiest way to supplement your conditioning. Again, most people like to lift weights, or men like to lift weights, and it's fun to lift. I think a lot of people don't like cardio, but cardio is going to be more important for competition than your strength training. You can see, it's the reason why if you watch UFC, there's tons of UFC fighters that are not that muscular. They're not that big, but their cardio is awesome. There's guys that in any Planet Fitness across the country, people that are more muscular than UFC champions, but couldn't like do anything to him in a fight. Fighting is not about what you look like. Again, bodybuilding, it's bodybuilding. You're trying to sculpt your body. That's what it's for. It's not functional. It doesn't make you fight better. The bodybuilders aren't the strongest people. But the same thing, if you're doing a strength training session, if you're doing 3 strength training sessions, you are getting stronger. Strength is a part of jiu-jitsu, but skill is number 1, conditioning is number 2, strength would be at number 3 after that. So yeah, I'd go skill, conditioning, strength. All of them are important, but in that order for combat sports. Because if you have enough skill, you can knock somebody out, or you can submit them. If you have enough conditioning, then you can use your skill. If you have enough strength, then it's going to augment that and help out. I'm not saying not to do strength training. I'm just saying if you're going to do a tournament, you want 4 sessions a week where you are going to that. I hate life and I am delirious because I'm pushing my cardio so hard. Also with that, the safety thing to put on that, only do that if your heart is healthy to do it. If you don't know if your heart is healthy to do it, consult a doctor, consult a health professional. But if you're training consistently and you know that your heart is healthy to do that, to do high intensity cardio, then yes, you want to do 4 sessions a week, but not if your heart is unhealthy. And also don't be shotgunning 3 Red Bulls and then like going and doing sprints or something like that. I'm not telling you to do that. Be smart with your conditioning training. And also if you feel like you're overtrained, steady state cardio is still good. Going and running for like 3 miles, 2 or 3 miles is also good. It's really good if you do feel like you're a bit overtrained and you still want to do something. A steady state cardio, going and running for 3 miles, is still good. And also it can actually help with recovery, just as an active recovery, that slow pace moving, and it burns calories if you're trying to get some weight off. Okay. Yeah. But the other thing with it, I understand the reason why if your cardio is not good, you're going to try to sprint for a fight or tournament for a specific scenario. That might be a smart strategy, but that's not smart to do in the gym. yeah, it's not smart to do in the gym. It's really an ego thing in the gym where it's like, hey, I gotta win real quick. And it's like, if I lose, then dang, I lose. If you lose, you lose. That's what sport practice is for. Okay. If you have a problem losing in practice, like, you want to address that. It's going to happen. Nobody likes to lose, but it's part of the game. If you don't lose, if you don't lose in practice, you're never going to get better. If you're losing in practice consistently, there is a way that you could not be getting better is if you're not paying attention, you just keep doing the same mistake. But even people at the highest level are going to lose in practice all the time. Just part of it. It really frustrates me, like sports culture and pop culture, where they say, like, you never lose, don't take an L or whatever. It's like, man, this is so stupid. This is not real. This is not real in sports. It's not real in business. My favorite business people that I follow, they talk about taking losses in business all the time. It's part of it. In sports, same thing. Like Michael Jordan, anybody you want to look at, it's like they lost in their career all the time. And that's what they got good. But it's people that, I don't know, they're selling some BS is what they're selling. When they say that they never lose, that they never did lose, they're lying. I put on a note, like, if your cardio is not good, if your cardio is not good and you're trying to just go really quick, you're trying to win in a minute or win in 30 seconds in practice, it's like, just spending all of your income on lottery tickets as a strategy to win overall or to get rich. And what happens is you just never win. You just spent, and now you can't pay rent or your car payment because you just spent everything on lottery tickets. Instead, it's much smarter to slowly save money and slowly and surely invest. But that's not exciting. The get rich quick scheme is, but it doesn't work. It works very, 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 very rarely. But usually the tortoise strategy is better than the hare, but it's not as exciting. So people don't want to do it. Also, the tortoise strategy, the slow and steady strategy is also, it's frustrating because you try and you try and you keep on running into failures. That I understand. It's frustrating. But that's what I'm trying to do with the podcast, to try to give realistic expectations. There's been some moves that I had to work on for 2 years to really, really, really like them, like to really like it. But I'm sure if you look in your life, when you look at things in your life, there's things in your life that took several years to develop, that you're happy with and that you're proud of. But if you could have talked to your younger self, you would say, hey, look, just stay patient. Stay patient. It's going to get better. Just keep on every day, just a little bit better, 1% better every day. So that's all I'm trying to do with combat sports, exactly the same way. So with the cardio thing, just recommendation for practice. This is for everybody. That will make all of us better. So the reason why I'm doing the podcast also is like the civilization or the team that's the best organized and the most civil, that works well together, prospers and does well and innovates and evolves and grows the fastest and ultimately wins in the long run. So I'm trying to do this because if we get it, we're all like, we did awesome yesterday, did awesome, but we're starting to get good momentum. It's taken years, but we're hitting really good momentum now. So let's keep it up. The AGF tournament yesterday, we had 14 competitors. So we got first place for no-gi, as a gym, as a team for the adult no-gi. That's really what we wanted to win. We did well in gi as well. But we didn't have as many people do gi. More people did no-gi. And more of our competitors were more focused on no-gi for this tournament. No-gi is what the trophy that we were really looking for. We got first place. The two teams that we got first place is no-gi. The team that got second place is Pedigo Submission Fighting, or Pedigo. They're a really big team, one of the best American teams right now. Sure, if you're into jiu-jitsu, you know who they are. If you don't, you can go on YouTube and look up Pedigo. I respect their team. I identify with a lot of things with their team. I like their tenacity. I like their grit. And honestly, all the Pedigo people that we've competed against, they're always there. The thing that I identify with is they're very competitive, but we never have any issues with them. Really respectful, like cool. They don't want to win in a dirty way. We had a couple scenarios the tournament yesterday against Pedigo, and it was like okay, cool, fair play to you. Like we don't want to win in a dirty way. You don't want to win in a dirty way. Let's do it. Whoever is the better person, like let them win. Whoever's better, let them win. We're not trying to win off of some like weird little technicality or a little weird thing. But we compete against them in the large international tournaments and the local tournaments, but they're a really big, you know, if you look at Flow Grappling, you're going to see a documentary piece on Pedigo every time. They have a lot. Like I said, they're one of the best American teams right now. They got second place. Third place was Team Sean Hammonds. That's my original jiu-jitsu instructor. I received my brown belt under Sean Hammonds. I still have a lot of respect for Sean. I talk to him regularly every time I see him at a tournament. Sean's a great coach. He develops really good athletes. I don't know how many gyms Sean has. I don't know how many gyms Pedigo has under them. They have a lot under their banner across the country. I know that Sean, he doesn't have as many as Pedigo, but in Tennessee, Sean has a very strong association. Team Sean Hammonds, Tennessee, Kentucky, I know he has a really strong association. So with both of those, respect both of those teams and respect both of the head coaches of those teams and their athletes. Sean, the same thing. I never have bad experiences with Sean Hammonds or his people. I mean, a lot of them, like I said, I got my brown belt under Sean, and a lot of Sean Hammond's students and coaches from his affiliate gyms, I was a white belt with or blue belt with. I came up with them. You know, lots of them I see are really good friends. So it's no disrespect to them. Just very proud that we got first place because we were just a single gym. So we weren't like a conglomerate of multiple gyms combined together. We had 14 competitors. I believe Pedigo had 22 or 23. And I believe Team Sean Hammonds had 33 or 34. So we definitely had a quality. We had a small group, but it was a high quality. We did very well. And for second and third place, you know, you... like your competitor, your competition makes you better. So like I said, I really respect Pedigo. I really respect Team Sean Hammonds. So that's what makes the victory even better, is to beat really difficult competition, people that you respect. So yeah, it's sick. And also we're just a single gym. Like I said, they had more competitors, you know, almost double, or Team Sean Hammonds double. Pedigo almost double, but yeah, more competitors, and to win with less competitors against good competition, against good teams, it's amazing. It's awesome, honestly. So thank you, everybody. It is awesome. It's sick. This is, when we opened up the gym 5 years ago, this was what me, Kevin, and Eric talked about. This is one of the things we talked about. And we're like, it's just going to take time. It's just a matter of time. We're going to be there. Yeah, say it's really awesome. So want to give a shout out to all of our competitors. Yesterday we had Carter Tompkins, Perry Baltz, Vanessa Chang, Kel Denton, Zach Dover, Hunter Gregory, Jonathan Kelly, Elliot Kim, Zach McAteer, Donovan Pritchard, Nicholas Swan, Austin Swink, Cameron Tompkins, and Gio Torres. So those are the 14 that went and represented the gym yesterday. Congratulations. Thank you. If it wasn't for all of you, we would not have that number one, that team trophy. That's our first team trophy as a gym. And we beat two really good. We beat a lot of teams. I think there was like 40 or 45 teams total for it. But we beat a lot of really good teams. And just as a single gym, that's really, really awesome. So congratulations. If you see any of those people in the gym, you know, give them some kudos, give them some cred for carrying the flag and representing and doing well. Also, I'm really proud everybody carried themselves with class. That's what I'll say, with class. So that's good. That's really, really good. You know, like, you know, I'm not telling you to be a pushover. If somebody like messes with you or something, stand your ground with them. But at the same time, you don't have to start a fight or start drama with people. Just be classy, and be respectable. So, you know, don't argue with the referees. There are going to be arguments and debates with other teams and other coaches. Just keep it keep it professional. Don't make it a personal thing. Don't make it a personal attack. Argue the topic, the facts, what's going on, and carry yourself, you know, carry yourself professionally. And then when you win the division, it's like, that's awesome. You were well-behaved. You're professional. You're respectable. You're super skillful. You're really good. That's awesome. That's like living a good life. That's awesome. Nobody likes the person who wins the tournament and is like, you know, being shitty to people that lost or something like that. If you're a strong person, you don't have to do that. Yeah, it's just not necessary. If you're the champion of the division, it's not necessary. You're already the champion of the division. Yeah, if somebody wants to be salty and hate on you or whatever, that's their problem. Now, if they step up to your face again, like, stand your ground, protect yourself 100%. You don't have to be a pushover in that situation. But yeah, everybody did awesome yesterday. And the last little bit to wrap it up, me and Kevin were talking today, doing a breakdown, and it was a lesson from, there was a division one wrestler that was a blue belt that was in the tournament yesterday. He was doing really well, and I think he was winning his match. He was winning his matches, and I think he wrestled at Fresno. I think Hunter told me he was in Hunter's division, but I believe it's Division One school. You know, so Division One college wrestling, high wrestling. That's difficult to do. The majority of the population cannot wrestle Division One. It's not easy. It's very tough. But when me and Kevin were talking about this and talking to Hunter, this is something for jiu-jitsu. I want all of our students to understand. This is really, really important. So if you look up an opponent, you see they're a college wrestler, Division One wrestler. This is just something that's so it doesn't get in your head. Okay. I came from a wrestling background. I didn't wrestle Division One, but from wrestling and jiu-jitsu, I started in 2002. So now 20 years of experiencing, watching it. Some takeaways to think about this is, if someone is a college wrestler, they are a Division One, or they're a college wrestler in wrestling. They are different sports. Okay. If someone was a national champion in judo, yes, you would want to notate that and not try to throw them, because they're going to throw you. But that's a national champion in judo. They're not a national champion in jiu-jitsu. Okay. The sports are different. Okay. So like, if you take a Division One wrestler and they do hardcore jiu-jitsu, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and they actually do Brazilian jiu-jitsu, not wrestling where they're avoiding jiu-jitsu, but they actually humble themselves and do jiu-jitsu for 3 years. Yes, a Division One wrestler is going to be really tough if they're doing 5 days a week, or, you know, whatever. They're doing real jiu-jitsu. They're actually learning how to play guard and actually learning how to pass guard. Then yes, they're going to be really tough after 3 years of training. But the thing is, they have to actually do jiu-jitsu. Okay, don't let a college wrestler like spook you or scare you. The ones that are going to be scary are the ones that actually do jiu-jitsu. And if they actually do jiu-jitsu, then you're just having a jiu-jitsu match, okay? Now, the wrestling and the takedowns are going to be a skill that's developed there. But if you're going against a good college wrestler, don't try to wrestle with them, okay? Don't engage in, like, the old school jiu-jitsu used to have hard times with wrestlers. And the reason why is they had a really antiquated, undeveloped style of jiu-jitsu. It was a lot of close guard, like close guard attempting scissor sweeps, okay? The reason why that formula doesn't work, close guard doing scissor sweeps, from close guard, they have inside position because your legs are wrapped around the outside of them, okay? All they have to do is put their hands on your chest or your biceps, and now they have pure inside position. You fatigue yourself and you're out of position, they naturally have the advantage by playing close guard. So if you're going against a college wrestler, do not try, like, if you believe you can take them down, then yeah, go for your takedowns. We're working on a wrestling, but do make them do jiu-jitsu, okay? Close guard is not going to be making them do jiu-jitsu. If you go to close guard and try to scissor sweep them, you're allowing them to wrestle, to use base and inside position, head position on your chest, hands on the biceps. Instead, pull guard, use a combination of butterfly guard, single leg X guard, spider guard, supine guard, things that actually take developed and leg injuries, things that the only way you can are good at them is if you actually do jiu-jitsu. Okay, if you don't actually do jiu-jitsu, you're not going to be able to pass a good supine guard, a good spider guard, a good butterfly guard. You're not going to be able to defend. You'll be able to defend a little bit by just disengaging and stalling, but the ref's going to call them for stalling the same way. Okay, if they're just disengaging, good leg entries, not grab an ankle and just yanking for it. I'm talking about technical leg lock entries, like good leg lock entries that are technically sound, that have real mechanics, that there's actual. They might be able to defend the same way as like a street fighter might be able to defend a single combination, but they could defend it by just jumping and fleeing the mat, jumping out of bounds, okay, something like that. They could just run away. But what's going to happen is you just stay steady and smart with your stance. And for when it's guard, it's knees to elbows, tight knee to elbow connection. Don't try to chase after them and get a separation of knees to elbow where they can get chest to chest on you for a guard pass. Tight knees to elbow, stay patient, and work on all the things I just mentioned. And if they disengage or they back away, just keep, it's the same thing if you're boxing and somebody's just covering up, you just keep throwing combinations. If they block, it's okay. You take your time, you steadily keep attacking, you stay patient. You don't get like scrappy or wild or something. When you do, you'll make an error and that will give them an opportunity to pass. But Nicky Rod, of all people, gave a really good, interview recently where he was saying the reason why he's done so well in jiu-jitsu was because he humbled himself and he actually decided to do jiu-jitsu. And he said the reason why a lot of wrestlers have a hard time is if they're really good at wrestling, they can't humble themselves and actually do jiu-jitsu, meaning they won't start in 50-50. They won't actually play spider guard from their back. They won't work on it. Instead, they'll just force wrestle-ups all the time, or they'll bridge people over in side control, people that are not as athletic or as much grappling skill. So they never develop. Whenever somebody goes for a leg lock, they just turn and kick out of it. But it's when somebody that's good at leg locks gets a bite in a tournament, they can't turn and kick out of it. It doesn't work. So don't let a college wrestler, Division I or whatever, or an All-American, whatever, do not let them get in your head. They are different sports. The only way they're going to be able to beat you at jiu-jitsu is if they are better at jiu-jitsu, meaning they've practiced better, and you choose not to do jiu-jitsu. If you get sloppy and you try to let them wrestle with you, and that goes for mat work also, but do jiu-jitsu, okay? Now, with that being said, a lot of gyms don't train the correct way. Okay, they really don't. A lot of gyms are doing stuff, the same moves that were done 30 years ago, the exact same way, and they will not change because they're just deciding not to adapt. Like, no military force does this. No military force just says, well, yeah, this weapon system is better, more efficient in every way. No, like every military force is always constantly trying to upgrade, all the way from spears and knives to crossbows to advanced weapons that we have nowadays. Everybody's constantly trying to update their things, but there are some jiu-jitsu gyms that are not trying to do it. They are trying to cling on for some reason, and I think it's because the instructors aren't good. The instructors aren't humble. They're not good at the new things, at the new techniques, and instead of trying to work on them, which is hard, it gives you headaches because you have to learn new stuff, they are trying to just do the same old thing. But no military would ever do that. No military would be like, yeah, crossbows are the way to do it. Like, crossbows nowadays, that's what's going to win. It's like, no, it's not. But the leaders, the instructors, they're not humble enough to say, hey, I'm not good at this. I need to learn this. I need to update my game. And when a really good wrestler goes to that gym, yeah, they're going to destroy. Yeah, they're going to destroy everybody. They're going to, yeah, because people, they don't know how to play supine guard, or like they don't know how to transition from butterfly to X, a single leg. They don't, if somebody's putting a leg lock, their only chance is only to grab the head and hold on or squeeze or something. They don't actually know how to heel slip, or they don't actually know technical escapes. So if you got a college wrestler, Division I, national champion, whatever, do jiu-jitsu with them. Don't wrestle with them. Like, the only way they're going to beat you is if they're better at jiu-jitsu, as long as you use jiu-jitsu. But a lot of college wrestlers, a lot of jiu-jitsu gyms are not doing jiu-jitsu in a smart way. So when a college wrestler comes, they're like, yeah, I don't know what to do with that guy. I can't do anything. Like, we had a two-time All-American, great blue belt. He's blue belt in jiu-jitsu, two-time All-American. Great guy. I wish he still lived here and was training with us. He's very good. On the feet, when we do takedowns, he would cross me up, and his wrestling was so beautiful. Like, I would laugh when he would get takedowns because it's so beautiful. But on the mat, using jiu-jitsu, he was a blue belt level in jiu-jitsu. It was actually kind of surprising. It was like, oh, okay, yeah, that's right. Nicky Ryan, Gordon Ryan's little brother, went against like a, I think, two-time national champion or two-time All-American Division I and submitted him less than a minute. And they're like, what's going to happen? And I was like, oh, it's going to be easy match. You're just going to pull guard right away. And it's easy. It's, I say easy, it's not easy. You have to actually be good. But my point is, do jiu-jitsu, don't let it get in your head. Old school playing closed guard, yes, don't that's not going to be a smart thing against wrestlers. That's not going to be a good thing. But that's 20 years ago. That's when I first started training. Jiu-jitsu has evolved so much past that. We have upgraded our weaponry and arsenal so much past that. So don't try to use the bow and arrow against, you know, somebody with a crossbow or somebody with a rifle. Like, yeah, don't do that. Instead, use the new upgraded stuff. Now, if your gym isn't teaching it because they're not evolving, they're not updating their game, yeah, I don't know what to say. Or if you're at a different gym. But that's our strategy at Phoenix MMA, is to constantly just upgrade our game because there's new things being developed all the time. And we don't want to be left behind. Also, it makes it more fun. Learning new stuff is fun. It's interesting. Keeps you fresh. Yeah. Oh, if you are a college wrestler, I love college wrestlers. I love wrestling. Me, Eric, and Kevin all love wrestling. I'm not discrediting wrestling. The wrestlers, if you are a college wrestler or high school wrestler, you can get really good at jiu-jitsu really quick as long as you humble yourself and you decide to actually learn jiu-jitsu. So actually learn how to do leg locks, how to actually escape leg locks, how to counter leg locks, how to do sweeps, how to play spider guard, how to do triangle chokes, how to do a pilates, how to escape all these things. Not just ripping out of them because you're more athletic than the brand new white belt, the two-stripe white belt that's been training, you know, that never wrestled. You're not just athletically beast moding them, okay? One of our heavyweights, Kale, in the challenger division, the reason why he was going against a solid wrestler, Kale has never wrestled. The guy was having a hard time getting a takedown. He finally did get a takedown. Kale ended up submitting him with a triangle choke. But the main reason why Kale... the main reason why Kale beat the guy was because Kale's 240 pounds, but he doesn't move like a heavyweight. He doesn't do jiu-jitsu like a heavyweight. He does jiu-jitsu like a 170-pounder, meaning when the guy took him down, Kale has been working on his triangle choke, and he did a triangle choke. A lot of heavyweights, if somebody takes him down, they just grab on the head for a headlock, or they go for a guillotine from side control, or a guillotine from half guard, or Kimura from half guard. When the guy did take him down, Kale landed in a solid position and started climbing his legs at 240 pounds, which is awesome. All of you can do it. I believe in all of you. I'm going to help teach you how to do it. Kevin's going to help teach you. Eric's going to help teach you. Everybody else in the gym is going to help teach you. All the competitors, everybody's going to help you. We just got to have the right mindset so we're coachable and teachable. Yeah, my rant's over. I hope everybody enjoyed this episode. And tomorrow we get open mat for Memorial Day. And if I see you tomorrow, awesome. If not, see you on Tuesday or later throughout the week. I hope everybody has a great rest of your Sunday and a great Memorial Day. See you. Bye.